We are a listener-supported, community-based radio station. And part of that community, believe it or not, includes Susan Simon, who's here to talk about food or books?
To talk about food.
Okay, not here for the book festival?
But I am.
I have to say first
okay. and foremost.
Sorry. Oh, okay.
First, if you don't mind. And then I can say it at the end again, because the book festival is on May 6th,
Wait,
which is a
whoa,
week.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You asked if I don't mind.
Oh,
no, I don't mind. But I am kind of confused by you wearing sunglasses in here.
But that's actually, they're my distance glasses.
Oh, okay, sorry. You can't see me without... You don't want to see me, is what you're saying. I don't blame you.
Maybe it's better like this because you're kind of blurred.
Right into the thick of things.
Yeah, but those sunglasses are of a bluish tint.
Yes, they are.
So maybe they make you have blue eyes or something.
Well,
or a bluish look.
Well, they also keep
are
me
you
from
calling it bluish?
Bluish.
They keep me from squinting.
Yes. Oh, that's good.
Which I wish I started wearing earlier, then maybe I wouldn't have this big wrinkle in the middle of my forehead from squinting so much.
Makes you look wise.
Anyway, back to the book festival, because it's really, it's this year is the ninth year, which is leading up to the big 10th year, which most book festivals don't last this long. So that we have, we in Hudson have something to be very proud of, that this book festival goes on and it gets better each year. And, if I may say, one of the reasons it's getting better and more inclusive is the Hudson Children's Book Festival Literacy Fund, which has allowed so many kids to purchase books. And in the past, teachers have given out the Good Fours that we provide, the literacy that we fundraise and provide those Good Four coupons to 400 or 500 kids.
Really? That many?
Of the choice. But this year, and this is very important, every single child and all three public Hudson City School District schools are getting a Good Four. That's 1,850 Good Fours we're giving out.
Wow.
So I think that's news, and I think that's great. So I think that every kid who wants to get a book from the author of their choice at the book festival can.
They can't turn it in for, like, smokes or something like that, right?
They could do a little if
they could try.
They could try. Yeah, exactly, Ellen. They could try. However, I think that's good. That's newsworthy.
Sorry, that's kind of the thing I probably would have.
Yeah, they could turn it. Well, whatever they sell at Spotty Dog. I know we're not supposed to mention.
No, you can. I mean, that's the sponsor.
Spotty Dog is a provider and a sponsor of the book festival and a provider of all the books.
Nice.
But that the authors have at the book festival.
Right.
Their books.
And sell, and they take the money in and pay it to the author at the end? Is that
no, the author paid to the author. The author should be so lucky. The author has to deal with their publisher.
Oh.
No, the author doesn't. The author, whatever their deal with their publisher is, you know, authors get contracts with a publisher and some, you know, and they get some kind of royalty.
Sure. This is just to promote the book.
Yeah.
Are there any published books?
I think there are. I think there are. I can't tell you exactly who, because you know the book festival likes to include some authors who are self-published. There are especially some local writers who are self-published. But this year there are some big stars in the children's and young adult book world coming. Jack Gantos, who's published 50 books. The Joey Pizza books, the Rotten Ralph books, which are pretty popular among young kids.
Rotten Ralph.
And Ellen Hopkins, who has published some young adult books, very, very popular with kids in the school.
I was reading a book 2 weeks ago that's a popular series, and I can't remember the name. I wish I could remember the name. And I was appalled at the book. I thought it was really bad.
Really?
Yeah, but the young person who chose it loved it.
Because I'm a mentor in the schools too, I'm sometimes appalled at the level, or not even a level, of writing some of these authors. I mean, it's
on the other hand, I've been reading to a young person a Carl Hiaasen book, which is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one really shocked me because it really just seemed like a big advertisement for shopping. You know, it was there to a young girl. And it was, just seemed like a big advertisement to shopping and who's most popular and...
Terrible.
Really horrible book. But anyway.
Terrible, terrible. No, no, there are a lot of authors that are, you know, really self-promoters and, you know, they you know...
I wish I could remember the series.
They have merchandise connected to their works, and which really drives me crazy.
The 11th book in the series, too, so it must be pretty popular. I don't know.
Did it have anything to do with pink?
The cover was pink, for one thing.
I think I may know who you're talking about.
Tell me, when you're mentoring a young person in school,
yes.
The way Ellen has mentored me,
and reading with them the book, or do you read to each other?
They read
to you.
They read.
Who chooses that book?
They do.
Oh, they do. They bring you a book.
Well, we mentor in two spots in the intermediate school. One is the library upstairs, and they can choose a book from the library shelves. And another spot that, because I mentor with Chris, and they're mostly young girls, unfortunately. I mean, we used to have boys too, but it's their choice. It's their choice to do reading at their lunch hour or engage in other activities which the school offers. Or we read in Laurie Campbell's room, and she's the literacy specialist coach in the intermediate school, and she has a lot of books in her room. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a mini library, and they choose from those books, too.
So you're talking about Hudson Reads or a different program
this
as well?
This is Hudson Reads.
Oh, because the one I was doing, I read to the kid.
And what program is that?
Hudson Reads.
Is it the elementary school?
Yeah, I guess it's elementary. That's
elementary school, yes. The elementary school, you have to read to them.
Oh, okay.
And the librarian often reads to them.
Oh, okay.
So you talk about the book a lot?
Yeah, we talk. You can ask me this question too, Ellen, you know.
Because you're a mentor now.
Well, is that called a mentor? I just read to the kid.
Well.
I ask him questions, make sure he understands all the words, try to, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. This is the Carl Hiaasen one. It's really.
So you're reading Carl Hiaasen to a second grader?
He wrote it for young people.
Oh, really?
It's a young adult book, yeah.
Oh, fabulous. Hmm. We stop at certain passages in the books that we read and explain words and talk about the idea that's been just promoted, just written about. Yes, it's very nice. But I'm here to talk about food today, aren't I?
Yes.
I mean, I would talk about this forever because it's a subject that's
dear to your heart.
It's definitely fun.
It's fun. It's rewarding. It's to see the kids excited. This literacy fun program is very rewarding too. Go ahead.
I was going to provide a transition.
Yes.
You wouldn't believe the plate of food he brought in to eat while we were reading today.
What did he bring?
It was really gross.
Oh.
Well, the first part was okay. It was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
But then he had some of those chicken mystery things.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, did they stink.
That's what they served. That's what they served in the intermediate. I was at mentoring today. That's what they serve in the intermediate school. It's appalling. Talk about literacy. There should be a whole food literacy program, too. There should be. That's a long road.
Yeah, it's not a piece of chicken underneath that
breading.
No,
it's not.
It's some weird... grayish looking stuff.
And the kids that bring their own lunch. Today there was a young girl that we mentor who brought in a box that's called Lunchables.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Lunchables.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you open it up and it has various compartments.
Cool.
With
crackers.
With crackers,
cheese.
Or there's some kind of mystery meat that she put on a piece of bread. There were a little package of Oreos, a little package of chips. I mean, where's the nutritional value in any of the things?
Well, are they selling that at the school? Or did
no,
you bring
she brought
it from
this
home?
Is the food. This was the food she brought from home. It almost made the stuff in the cafeteria of the school look good, if that's possible.
Well, I've seen those.
I mean,
things
that certainly
in the
makes
store.
That her mother or whoever is her caretaker easier just to go buy a box of food and say, here.
Yeah, I mean, the manufacturers are coming out with all kinds of things like that are packaged, prepackaged, so you don't even have to think about how many crackers shall I put in this lunch.
Right.
Heavens.
Heavens.
Heavens. Anyway, right now, here we are in the fertile Hudson Valley where there is enormous amount of really delicious food available, and especially right now, spring, We're getting. I think the first asparagus we'll see this Saturday at the farmer's market.
Oh, you know what's coming next week to the farmer's market?
What?
I'm so excited. The fishmonger.
The fishmonger from Pura Vida.
From is it Route 66?
No, it's Route
9.
It's Route 9.
Route 9.
Is it all going to be frozen?
I don't know.
Oh, it's not frozen at the market.
Right.
I'm
just wondering if you could bring it down, still keep it. That'd be nice.
Well, there are fish people in the markets in New York City.
Sure. And there's ice.
There's ice. It's all on ice.
Sure.
Yeah. And they always, it used to be on the email list of the guy that used to come from Montauk, Captain Phil, and he always used to say, "Now, ahoy, mateys, don't forget to bring your ice packs with you to the market." he'd say what was in, what he got. Maybe he was coming from Montauk, so he brought a lot of fresh stuff. But I think this guy that owns Pura Vida goes out in his boat from Montauk.
Yeah. Oh, he does?
Will he announce what he's had?
I hope he does. I mean, that would be a good thing. I think he's still learning what he needs to do business here. I mean, he was in the North Atlantic for a while. I know. He was in the North Atlantic for over a week. You know, I mean, I'm sure some of the stuff goes on his boat and gets quick frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some stuff that's fresh.
Do you go up there regularly?
I don't go there regularly, but I do go there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you go there?
No.
No?
I don't go anywhere.
You go there.
I've driven past it.
Oh, okay.
Several times.
So now that it's in the
I
market.
I know. I'm really excited.
Make it
excited
easier, yeah. It. No, I've gotten fish from him, yeah, like cod and... But last time I got some yellowtail flounder. So it's all local fish.
I like, you know, I kind of like the idea of Lunchables, you know.
Makes life easy, doesn't it?
Well, what would you put in your Lunchables, though? Mystery meat.
Well, whatever they give me. It's a box. How can you go?
It's not a bento box, that's for sure.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Anyway.
So, besides the fish, the greens, this is Primavera, the first green.
Right.
You know, it's a very apt name for the season that's approaching or that we're in. And it's the time when there's asparagus. There are a lot of greens, fiddlehead ferns, chives, ramps, just little things that are just popping out of the ground. And they're green.
I know.
And they're good.
I love the greens.
And so happy to eat them. And there's so many ways to prepare them. I mean, the easiest way is, I brought in this, one of my favorite book, which is called Red, White, and Greens, The Italian Way with Vegetables. Red, get that? The flag color, red, white, and green.
Clever.
Anyway, it's by a woman called Faith Willinger, who's an American who's lived in Italy for the past over 40 years. She's married to an Italian man, and she, her books are all Italian-focused, Italian food-focused. But one of my favorite recipes for asparagus comes from this book, and I never know it by heart. I always have to refer to this book. It's one of the recipes I have to refer constantly over and over again because of the way the steps are taken. But it's called penne with asparagus lemon sauce. So it's penne pasta, which is those short tubular pastas with an asparagus lemon sauce. And it involves taking the asparagus, peeling it, you know, from the bud or the tip down, and then chopping off the tips, putting them aside, then chopping the stalks into pieces and boiling them. So you boil the stalks and then you drain them. You pull out the stalks from the boiling water because you're going to need the asparagus water for the recipe. Pull out the cooked stems, put them aside, put the buds in, the bud end of the asparagus in for 2 or 3 minutes just to blanch them, pull them out. Then you take the stems that you just cooked and put them into a blender with lemon juice and olive oil and Parmesan cheese, and a little bit of the asparagus water, and you just puree it into this gorgeous, delicious asparagus lemon kind of sauce, and then you toss that with the pasta. You can cook, if there's enough asparagus water left, you can add to it. Cook the pasta in the asparagus water. Coat the pasta with this pureed asparagus and lemon sauce, and then add the tips in later as a little bit of a crunch and texture. So that is a delicious way. And I don't think it's, you know, you're not betraying the asparagus by cooking it like that. Because I know asparagus is meant to be eaten in its purest form. There's nothing that marries better with asparagus aside from just butter on it or hollandaise or olive oil is an egg, asparagus with an egg, with a fried egg, which
is that's an Italian thing, isn't it?
Well, they call it in Italy, they call it uova alla Bismarck.
Because I learned it somehow when I was there, I think. I just cook the asparagus in a little water.
Uh-huh.
And then, I mean, I have to cut it up some to make it fit in the pan, mm-hmm. I think. And then I cook it a little bit, take any the water away mm-hmm. if there's too much, put a little olive oil in,
mm-hmm.
and butter, I think.
Butter, yes.
And plop in a couple of eggs, break the yolks so they, you know, mm-hmm. go all over, and put Parmesan cheese on it.
Mm. Delicious, right?
It's good. It's eggs and asparagus work very well together.
Yes, they do. Apparently, I'm allowed to mention businesses in town, right?
Sure.
Because, I mean, one of my very favorite places is Little Deb's Oasis.
Mm-hmm.
And they just posted a photograph of what they're doing with the first asparagus. And it involves hard-boiled eggs and asparagus, but it also involves a lot of other ingredients as they do, and they do so brilliantly, without again betraying the flavor of the main ingredient. Looks delicious. I think I'm going to go there tomorrow and hopefully order it.
What do they call it?
Eggs and asparagus, I think. I don't know. They posted it on Instagram.
Huevos asparagosos.
Something like that. Yes. The one of my great memories of springtime in Italy is having risotto with wild asparagus and something called, especially the Veneto, where risotto with vegetables are a big, big, big dish. Risotto with wild asparagus and something they call choppette, which are wild greens, which the Italians love. I don't know if I just have this picture of when I was growing up, of people walking along the side of the road about this time of the year picking dandelion greens. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of dandelion greens around now.
My father just went out in our side yard and dug them up.
He did? And yep. He ate them?
Yes.
No.
My mother cooked them.
Oh.
He ate them. We sat around and said, ugh, how can you eat those weeds?
And he liked them. Obviously,
oh,
he
yeah.
liked them.
And he liked something called cowslips. I don't know what cowslips are, but they're... I think they grow in,
marsh.
You know, along a creek bed or something, mm-hmm. like watercress would mm-hmm. requires a lot of water. I think you used to go someplace where there was this creek.
So he was Yul Gibbons way before Yul Gibbons, or not way before, maybe.
Well, he got all excited when Yul Gibbons published his first book. It was, you know, it was in the New York Times, and I made it, you know, cut it out of the Times and sent it to him. And he said, get me the book. He's all excited about it.
It was a stuff.
And also,
he
picked mushrooms.
I
don't think he knew what he was doing, but.
Well, he lived to tell the tale.
Yeah.
But he was high.
No.
No.
Not on mushrooms anyway. But, he and my mother got sick once from eating mushrooms,
uh-huh.
but they didn't, you know, they lived a long
they got
life,
sick from eating,
right.
But then did they eat them again? Or did getting sick on them stop them from eating mushrooms?
That I don't remember.
Because I stopped eating mushrooms because I gotten sick too many times on them. And then I talked to my gastroenterologist about this fact because it pains me that I can't eat mushrooms without getting sick. And he said, not unusual. There's a sugar in mushrooms that a lot of people are intolerant.
Are you talking about mushrooms that you picked in
mushrooms,
the wild?
I mean, mushrooms in the wild. I mean, this happened to me when I was working on a book in Italy years ago that I got sick from eating a raw mushroom salad that I was with my friend, and he ate the same thing, and he didn't get sick. So I stopped eating mushrooms for a long time. Then I came here, and there's so many beautiful mushrooms around. There's chanterelles that everybody picks. So one day I had one friend made a chanterelle frittata. Then dinner, somebody made a pizza with chanterelle on it, and I got violently ill the next day. And I said,
dear.
This is it. I can't do this. I can't do mushrooms anymore. And then the doctor sort of provided the proof that people do have an intolerance to them because of the contents.
Are chanterelles the orange?
Yeah. They
orange
can be
ones.
Orange or they can be black, too. There are black ones around here.
Hmm.
Yep. Oh, anyway. So asparagus, things to do with asparagus. Tom, do you eat asparagus?
I love asparagus, yes.
And how do you fix it?
Let's see. Sometimes, my wife likes making risotto with asparagus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then sometimes just in the oven with just sprinkle, some olive oil and breadcrumbs.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, and some lemon juice, maybe.
Delicious.
That kind of thing. That's
I think asparagus, roasted asparagus is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. They are.
It's really good.
It gets crunchy on the outside mm-hmm. and all creamy on the
yep.
inside. Just delicious.
I know.
Just delicious. I like doing that, roasting the asparagus and then putting a poached egg on top rather than, you can do it, but like you do it, there are many ways to combine asparagus and eggs. I mean, you could do asparagus mimosa, which was you do a hard cooked egg and you separate the white from the yolk and then you sieve the whites and you sieve the yolk. So you get this sprinkle of yellow and white that you can, it's a little more complicated, but it's very pretty if you're going to do something fancy. What do I have in here? I did the wild greens and wild asparagus risotto, which was so good in the Veneto. And then asparagus, there seemed to be a lot of combination of asparagus with capers and anchovies and other ingredients in this book, which I think makes sense because those ingredients with their acid and their salt kind of punch up the asparagus. So you can do that with a salad. Mm. She has a recipe in this book for what she calls asparagus carpaccio, and it's peeling the asparagus and then cutting it on the diagonal with a mandolin or a sharp blade in a food processor or making it as thin as possible, then spreading it on a plate, pouring olive oil over, and then doing the same thing with shards of a Parmesan cheese on top.
As usual, every time Susan comes here, I have a saliva problem. Don't you get hungry when Susan's here?
Yes.
I'm also...
it makes me think of a book I'm almost finished with that I'm reading.
What are you reading?
Is it about food?
Sort of.
What is it?
It's called Holy Anorexics.
What?
It's about female saints and a different version of anorexia. Female saints in the 14th century predominantly who deprive themselves of food. But not for the psychological reasons that a modern woman might, but for, religious reasons.
It's
mostly set in Italy, too. I mean, it's mostly about Italian saints. It's really an incredible book.
And they're doing this to show their faith? Their faith?
Sure. Yeah, among other things. Well, the author's thesis is that they're doing it to show their faith in a way that separates them from what the male-dominated church allows them to do.
Who's the author of this book?
A professor at Rutgers named Rudolf Bell.
Doesn't sound Italian to me.
No, but his specialty is Italy. Thinking about food, thinking about people who deprive themselves of food for whatever reason. Kind of weird that I happen to be reading this, but somebody recommended it to me, so.
There you go.
But it's weird because it's Italian. It's about Italy, and you read about the types of things they did allow themselves to eat on occasion and be not what you'd expect. You know what I mean? It would be like a really good vegetable or some really good bread or,
Straight. I mean, but also I have to say that I think a lot of people have this kind of misconception of Italians and their food habits, and I think it grew out of what immigrants did when they came to this country. I mean, as soon as they started making some money, they were buying the food that they were deprived of before they came here. Mm-hmm. And, Sunday sauce, I think, came out of that with just buying every kind of meat possible and putting it into the sauce. But in my all the years I've lived in Italy, I haven't come across as many overweight people in Italy as in this country. Mm. That's for sure. That's for positively sure. And then if you go to the north of Italy, you find people in very good shape, even though they're eating butter instead of olive oil.
Mm.
And this is where who was it? Oh God, what am I thinking of? I don't want to tell this story badly, but it had to do with somebody who came over the Alps into Milan and was treated to asparagus, and the host dressed the asparagus with butter, not olive oil, as the Romans used to do. And then when this person went back to Rome, and it was somebody famous like Julius Caesar probably, I don't know, he went back to Rome, he started dressing his asparagus with butter instead of olive oil, and it was known as asparagi alla milanese from that from that time on because of the butter he ate there. Do we still have time? I could talk about spinach because spinach is like one of my favorite things.
Oh,
but
spinach,
if you,
yeah.
If you have the time. If not, I understand.
Let me just say that I pulled out from 2009 in the New York Times, Mark Bittman, a minimalist, as they call him, they published this article called 101 Simple Salads for the Season. And it really is inspiring in the sense that you can take any vegetable and make salad out of it.
Of course, yes.
And this is the only asparagus one that I happen to run across, and it just is so simple. It's exactly what you were saying. Shave raw asparagus stalks with a vegetable peeler. Discard the tough first pass of the peeler, that is, the peel, but do use the tips whole. Dress with lemon vinaigrette and coarse salt. Chopped hard-boiled eggs, optional, but good. It's a, you know, it's done the world over.
It's done the world over. And let me just add something to the origin of the word salad, which comes from sale, salt. So what you just said about any vegetable that you salt, I mean, could be made into a salad. I mean, when you salt most vegetables, yes. Insalata, salad, salt.
Yeah.
Salt.
Or fruit, as a matter of fact. Or fruit and vegetable together.
Or fruit and vegetable together.
Watermelon and tomato chunks.
Do they use? Does he use feta cheese with that, too?
Cube watermelon and combined with tomato chunks, basil, and basic vinaigrette. You can substitute peach for the watermelon or the tomato, but not both, okay? You can also add bacon or feta, but there goes the veganness. Oh, that's right. This was he also had a vegan salad section in this article. But I've always thought to make that, but I've never gotten past. I've never actually made it because if I bring watermelon home, I just eat
You just eat the watermelon. Speaking of vegan and vegetables, and we just mentioned it, and vegetables. I just last week ate at a new restaurant in the city called ABCV. It's part of the ABC Carpet Food Empire because they have a couple of restaurants there, and they're all sort of
food and carpets.
Well, do you know that ABC Carpet has several? They're all Jean-Georges Van Garechten restaurants at ABC Carpet. Jean-Georges Van Garechten, who is Jean-Georges, and it was Jojo. He started out his life in New York as with a restaurant called Jojo. He has a lot of restaurants. Anyway, they just opened a vegan restaurant at the back of ABC Carpet. Very delicious. So I walk in to meet my friend, and who's sitting there? One of the most famous vegans ever is Deepak Chopra. So I thought, okay, I'm in the right place. And then we proceeded to have the most delicious meal that was completely vegan.
Really?
They had two things that were not vegan. They gave you a choice of putting an egg on some stuff, which obviously is a no-no. And they had a couple of dishes that had yogurt. But they also gave you the choice of not having cow's milk yogurt, but having coconut milk yogurt or cashew milk yogurt. And we chose coconut milk yogurt for one of the dishes we had. And it was just delicious. Just everything we ate was delicious. I don't think I could be a vegan for life because I would miss, there are many things that I would miss. But I can tell you that this was a completely beautiful meal, tasty meal, satisfying meal.
I have a vegan story.
Yes.
We were having a dinner party and a young friend of ours came over who is a vegan. And my wife prepared a separate little bunch of vegetables and stuff for her. And at one point she said, because it was people were eating different parts of the house, and she said, oh, there's a plate of your stuff over by the oven. So she came back with this plate, and she said, is this for me? And it was the compost plate. I was, no, that's all the.
But she probably would have had it.
Yeah, well, I can't.
What?
Enough.
Coffee grounds.
Carrot peel. So, well, that's funny. That's perfect.
Yeah.
It's kind of perfect.
That's my vegan story.
So, okay, here's another story that I heard while I was having the vegan lunch with my friend who lives in the city. She said, I got to tell you a little story. She said, I was walking down the street the other day, and I was behind two men who were talking about this and that, and they all of a sudden started talking about this great new neighborhood in Brooklyn. And they said, and one said to the other, you know, it's the Hudson of Brooklyn.
Yay.
Well, that's a turnaround. Wasn't this the Brooklyn of upstate at one time?
Hmm.
The Hudson of Brooklyn.
You mean quarrelsome people.
It's, you know, it's hip. Anyway, there we go.
Well,
spinach.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Susan.
No, my pleasure.
As usual.
Always.
We always have a lot to talk about.
But
it makes me really hungry when you're here.
Give us the details on the book festival again?
Book festival is May 6th, and I know you have a lot of stuff going on in this town on May 6th. It's also the 20th year of the farmer's market.
Oh.
20th anniversary of the farmer's market on May 6th.
Wow.
Which I think it's, you know, opens at 9 o'clock. The book festival is 10 to 3 in the gymnasium at the Hudson High School.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be 75 authors and illustrators there signing their books. It's open to everybody, and every kid that goes to a Hudson City School District school will get a Good Four coupon that they can purchase one book from the author of their choice and have it signed and autographed, dedicated to them.
That's great.
Yeah. So
great.
Don't miss it. Do your Christmas shopping early.
Are you running a bus from the center of Hudson?
There are buses. There are a lot of buses. Is on the...
On the website?
The book festival website. There's a bus shuttle running all day long, all the way up to Stottsville and back down to Bliss Towers, making stops along the way.
So you don't have to worry about parking your car.
You can take the shuttle backwards and forwards.
Right.
Yeah, with a bunch of, you know, crazy kids throwing stuff and everything. That'd be fun. No, I like that.
You mean on the bus?
Yeah.
Throwing food? A food fight?
Or books?
Books. Okie doke. Thank you.
Anyway, thanks for coming in, Susan.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Our regular guest on the show, Susan Simon, cookbook author and translator and...
blogger.
And raconteur and...
and cook. And cook. Caterer.
And
were you as depressed as I was when I walked by Bonfilio today?
What are they? Are they closed?
No, but they were emptying out stuff.
Aren't they staying open until May 7th?
Yeah, but they were emptying out stuff. It's the beginning of the end there. Anyway, they'll be in Athens.